This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Now, guys, before we start this episode, we have to do a quick update on a best of placed on our pod feed last week.
Hey, Robert Stack, tell us what we're going to hear. So you may have heard, I think it was on the $1.98 Beauty Show episode, that we talked about a Naked Gun revival and, oh, it's never going to happen. As I'm sure you know by now, this is mentioned probably 2 to 3 months ago, there's going to be a new Naked Gun movie with Liam Neeson, of all people. So I take back the comment that I made, or one of us made, I think it was me, who said, there will never be a reboot of Naked Gun. Whoops.
Now listen, since Cody Rhodes just got cast in the Naked Gun reboot, I'm hoping he's this generation's Reggie Jackson.
I must kill the Queen.
Queen's already dead, mate.
Well, damn it. But now will Liam Neeson actually play Enrico Palazzo? And even better, will they get the guy from Pee-wee's Big Adventure to go, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo? I'd love to see that.
Okay, here's Joel Higgins as a Marshal.
An anthology about the bad, the short-lived, and the forgotten shows and events in television history. This is It Was a Thing on TV.
Before I change my mind!
I give you Super Train!
Episode 468, Submission 826, Best of the West. Best of the West aired on the American Broadcasting Company from September 10th of 1981 to August 23rd of 1982. For 22 episodes.
Did you have a 6 more than your crock block?
Yeah.
Did you know that's 88 less episodes than a hanging in?
No.
We talked about that, and guess what? The conversion factor in Canada, you got to do hanging ins. That's 110 episodes. This is 22, so that's 88 less, assuming this aired in Canada, which it probably did.
Speaking of Canada, this is the third show from September of 81 that we are covering. The other two shows were Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends and Pitfall.
I think that lasted a hanging in at least. I think that lasted more than 110 episodes. So maybe the new conversion factor shouldn't be a hanging in. It should be Pitfall for Canadian shows.
Okay, let's hear this theme song.
Days of yore in Western lore, a man returned from civil war. His heart beat pure beneath his vest. His name was Best, Best of the West. But not alone did he come home. His newfound bride was at his side, and with his boy who did protest, they all came west.
Yippee-ki-yi-yo, yippee-ki-yi-yay, give three mighty cheers. Yippee-ki-yi-yo, yippee-ki-yi-yay, for the Western pioneers.
And off they rode, this family, and man and wife, his boy makes three. It's through their deeds this land progressed. Hooray for Best, Best of the West.
What do you do when you're ABC in 1981?
Well, you're already riding high with Three's Company and the like.
Yeah, but soap ended that year. So they got stuff, but they lost one of their big shows.
But you still have Benson.
And you definitely have Happy Days, and you have Love Boat, and you have Fantasy Island.
Dynasty, y'all.
Yeah, I think that would have premiered in 81. But hold on, you still have Bosom Buddies.
Well, that's only going to last another season.
Yeah, I know. Well, I got a great idea, guys. How about a wacky sitcom in the Old West?
Sort of like F Troop, but as a family sitcom?
Yeah. Not only that, but you have him moving to the West. The guy to set up a new store in the West. But then he becomes the marshal of the town for some reason.
Let's just say a series of unfortunate events, especially unfortunate if your name is the Calico Kid.
Hey, don't bring Benoodles into this. What? She's Calico? She's my little kid. She's the Calico Kid.
So, okay. Sam Best is a former Union soldier who moves from the East Coast to the West Coast in the Old West with his Southern Belle wife and his smart mouth son. And let's just say, hilarity ensues.
What kind of hilarity would a Philadelphia soldier find in the town of Copper Creek, Montana, I wonder?
I wonder what made him want to go to, of all places, Montana.
Well, this is after the Civil War, so maybe there's some leftover gold in them dar hills.
Well, I was going to take it a step further and say that Montana probably ratified the Constitution and officially became a state around that time. So maybe it isn't necessarily gold, but it's just new American territory, new unexplored American territory.
Live research, Mike. Montana became a state November 8th, 1889. So that rates.
But still, Montana, you know, there's a lot of space there. And even now, what, 140 years later almost? There's not a whole heck of a lot to do in Montana. Apologies if you're in that part of the country.
Well, let's hear who's in this cast. So, Chico, you can go ahead with the cast list.
Oh, thank you very much. All right. So, playing Sam Best, a man who came from Philadelphia to open up a general store only to become the town's marshal, Joel Higgins. And, of course, we all remember Joel Higgins as Edward Stratton III on Silver Spoons.
Which he may not have even been in if this lasted more than a season.
But we'll get to that. But okay, Chico, playing his wife on the show.
His newly married Southern Belle wife, Elvira. The lovely and talented Carlene Watkins. Known for her role as Nurse Valerie in Galactica 1980, future entry, and Charlotte Cooper in another future entry, The Tortellis.
And how about a third future entry? Kay McKay on Bob. The Bob Newhart show from like 92, 93, where he was a comic book artist.
Since her character name's Elvira, you know what the first thing I thought of was? Not Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. You know what it was?
Is it the song Elvira? Elvira. Is it that?
Yes.
Ah, great.
Elvira. Hey, you're going to love this. Do you know who is a big fan of the Oak Ridge Boys? Do you want to take a guess?
Seth MacFarlane, I don't know.
No. Mike, do you want to take a guess?
Don't say it's something like your dad.
No. Who's one person we always like to mess around with on this podcast?
One person?
Okay, I'm going to take a guess. What? It's Mike Francesa?
No. Let me give you a hint. If they played at the Tokyo Dome...
So I messed up. Shut up!
If they played at the Tokyo Dome, they'd give it 5 stars.
Today I learned.
Dave Meltzer is a big fan of Oak Ridge Boys. Oh, by the way, he gave that Bryan Danielson Will Ospreay match at AEW Dynasty 6.5 stars. Even though it didn't take place in Tokyo Dome, he gave it 6.5 stars.
Must have been one hell of a match, let me tell you.
Not as good as when Jack Perry and the Young Bucks crippled Tony Khan.
By the way.
This is CNN breaking news.
They're doing the NFL draft as we're recording this. And Tony Khan is in the war room with his neck brace on.
You know what? To make this angle even more better, the Young Bucks should just like replace him in the war room and make the pick. And not only that, announce we're trading Trevor Lawrence for some used practice equipment to get the hell over his heels.
All I have to say is props to Tony Khan for his commitment to the bit.
Now, let's move on.
Yes, please. All right, so playing Sam Best's son and Elvira Best's stepson, Daniel Best, it was a thing on TV Hall of Famer Mino Pelucci.
Nope, he isn't in the Hall of Fame as of this episode. Maybe next year.
From Voyagers and the Bad News Bears. One of the town folks, Lady Gibbs, played by Valerie Bromfield, who's been in just a ton of things. She was in Needful Things, Mr. Mom, Nothing But Trouble. She wrote for SCTV and Space Cases. She wrote for Space Cases, y'all.
Oh my God, she wrote for Space Cases. You know what that means.
She wrote for Walter Jones and Jewel State.
That's true, yes.
And she was a voice, and I'm sure this is going to be future entry. She voiced Nurse Molly on Camp Candy.
Oh, Camp Candy. I love Camp Candy.
That's what you watch before you watch Captain and the Game Master. And we did talk about Valerie Bromfield on this show before. She played one of the Marys on Angie. She was Mary Mary.
Was she very quite contrary?
Oh, quite contrary.
Hey, guys, do you want me to do my version of the Angie theme again?
We need this for the album. Okay, seriously, how many themes have we recreated? We need to, like, I don't know when we need to do this. Sometime over the summer, maybe. But we need, like, one special episode where it's just us singing. Greg, take it away. Sing the Angie theme, because we need this for posterity. Now I have regrets about possibly doing a special of all of us singing. I mean, you sounded more like Beaker from the Muppets there. Meep, 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 meep.
Hold on. Chico's Earth 2 version of the Whammy has a comment.
I cut out the line! You suck! I agree with my brother over there! You suck!
Boo this man!
Hey, you guys want to sing Open All Night now? Hey, that was ABC in 1982, too, so that sort of meshes. Mm-hmm.
But okay, guys, playing the foil to Sam Best on this series, a character by the name of Porker Tillman. Jacob, just get it out of the way. Just say it.
Leonard Fry, Leonard Fry, anytime you call, Leonard will take care of you, winter, spring, or fall.
What the hell was that?
I don't know, I was thinking of Ted doing the Constance Fry bit on How I Met Your Mother, and it just came out.
Okay, well, you know, he could have done, as Jenny Olsen, from Mr. Smith, Leonard Fry. I know Greg, I know that's not accurate. Don't hate me. I'm just saying he could have said that.
Hold on, let me get him out. Johnny, just do it. That's right, Greg. From Mr. Smith, Leonard Fry.
From Mr. Smith. Yeah, I can't do that. I gotta be careful.
Don't piss off Johnny Olsen.
I'm not gonna piss off Johnny Olsen.
But playing Parker Tillman's henchman, Frog Rothschild Jr.
That would be Tracy Walter, his incompetent boob henchman. And he should know about incompetent boobs because he also played Cookie in City Slickers and Bob the Goon in Batman 89.
What? Bob the Goon?
Bob the Goon.
You're not even going to believe this. I had the Bob the Goon action figure from the Batman 89 set.
You know what that means? You have a Tracy Walker action figure.
That's right. And I still have the carrying case of all the Batman 89 figures. You know how much they are?
200, 300?
Yeah, something along those lines.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And also, let's remember that Batman, the 1989 movie, inspired beloved breakfast food around these parts, Batman cereal.
Batman cereal, yes.
But also about Tracy Walter, he was on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Ooh, what episode?
He was a bum in the episode, Bums Making a Mess All Over the City.
Bums making a mess all over the city.
They're just pissing all over the place, man.
Yeah, you're telling me.
And rounding out the cast as the town doctor, Doc Cullens, of questionable medical background, I should say, Tom Ewell, known for his roles in Beretta, Adam's Rib, The 7-Year Itch, and The Girl Can't Help It, sadly no longer with us.
Yeah, he died 30 years ago. And if he was still alive, he'd be 100 and what? Gotta do quick math. 113? Well, by the time you hear this, he'd be 113. He doesn't turn 113. No, gosh, I can't freaking do math. He'd turn 115, but his birthday is on Monday the 29th. So he would be 114 is the time we're recording this. But when you hear this, he would have been 115 years old. So yeah, he's not with us any longer because he old.
All right, let's get into these episodes, shall we? Episode 1, Pilot. Immediately after the Civil War, a Union soldier takes his Southern Belle wife to Montana, planning to open a general store and helping to change part of the wilderness into a thriving community. He has to battle not only the crooked town boss, a notorious gangster, but his family that are desperate to return to civilization. So, okay. You want to start this show with a big guest star playing the Calico Kid? I got two words for you. Great Scott!
Reverend Jim from Taxi's on this show? Awesome!
Yeah, I was going to say, those are the two words that came to mind. Not Great Scott, but Reverend Jim.
Look, to you, it's Reverend Jim. To me, it's Doc Brown, so.
And, of course, who we're speaking about is Christopher Lloyd. And he still would have been on Taxi at this point. Taxi would have lasted until 83.
Yeah, this would have been the last season on ABC before it moved to NBC in 82.
Well, it makes sense because Earl Pomerantz may have created the show, but the producers of this show were two of the creators of Taxi. That would be Ed Weinberger and David Davis.
Wait, you're saying the same Ed Weinberger who voiced Mr. Smith on the classic 1983 TV show Mr. Smith?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Mike.
Okay, so now this makes even more sense that Leonard Fry got hired as Raymond Holyoake on Mr. Smith because of the Ed Weinberger connection. It's all making sense now.
Episode 2, The Prisoner. When Sheriff Latimer arrives with a prisoner and gets ill from an embedded arrowhead, Sam has to take over. He has to then deal with the 8 brothers who arrive to set him free.
We got a big name as Sheriff Ben Latimer. Classic Western actor, Slim Pickens.
Oh, and we got 2 other names on top of that. Playing Billy Blackmore, Richard Mall, Free Bull. But also, another name that we've actually mentioned a number of times in the past, playing Bob. No last name given, just Bob, is Petra Crenshaw, who we've talked about in the past because he played Blue in Old School.
You're my boy, Blue. Episode 3, Mail Order Bride. Doc sends for a mail order bride, and when she arrives, the gang learns that she's more experienced than Doc thinks she is. Oh, I bet. And it's at the wedding that she reveals the truth.
And playing the bride, Amanda Tremaine, Betty White.
Well, of course she'd have a lot of experience. If you remember her role on the Mary Tyler Moore Show, Sue Ann Nivens, she was like a feisty, horny housewife. Am I lying?
No.
And it's the exact opposite of how she was as Rosen Island on The Golden Girls. Because actually, I think I read somewhere she was supposed to play the Blanche role originally, but that went to Rue McClanahan because I think she was younger or something like that. So she ended up with the ditzy Rosen Island role.
Now, hold on. Let's not forget Betty White on The Golden Girls banged a guy to death.
Another minor name in this episode, Dooley Wainwright, played by Art LaFleur, who you would remember as the Tooth Fairy in the Santa Claus 2 and Santa Claus 3.
And he played the Babe in The Sandlot.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think we talked about him before.
We did, because I'm taking a look at another role of his. He was in Field of Dreams. He played Chick Gandel.
That's right. Let's remember, legends never die.
We have talked about him in the past. This may be why the name rings a bell, because he was on an episode of Drexel's Class.
He also played Babe Ruth on an episode of AJ's Time Travelers.
What the hell is AJ's Time Travelers?
Sort of like your EI Saturday morning show with the guy traveling in time to help his three assignments.
Now, hold on a second. I got a question. Is it about AJ Pierzynski building a time machine and going back in time to famous events in baseball history?
Next episode.
No, I want the true answer to this, because that would actually be a show I might consider watching.
No. It was just a regular guy named AJ Malloy who captained a time machine ship who would go back in time to visit famous people.
Oh, I wish it was about AJ Pierzynski with a time machine.
I watched it.
Episode 4, The Calico Kid Returns. So we got Christopher Lloyd back in this episode. When the Calico Kid arrives, he announces his retirement as an outlaw and takes on a chef's role at the saloon. However, when a gunslinger challenges him to a gunfight, a plan is needed to avoid bloodshed. Now I need to share with you this image here on the IMDb page for this episode. Look, it's Christopher Lloyd being a chef in old-timey Western garb.
And right behind him is Burton Gilliam as Ringo. Looks like he's getting ready to wallop him or something.
And meanwhile, you have Joel Higgins in the background here. He's like, I don't want to look at this.
By the way, Burton Gilliam was in two other Western epics, 1974's Blazing Saddles and 1990's Back to the Future Part 3.
Oh, so he's reunited with Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future 3. Okay, but episode 5, The Reunion. Elvira's father, a Confederate colonel who stopped talking to her because she married a Yankee Sam, comes for a visit. But he's still not talking to her. Sam tries to fix things between them. So playing the colonel, Colonel Devereaux.
Colonel Lamont Devereaux.
That's right. The one, the only, Andy Griffith.
Tar Heel in the house.
Of course you'd mention that. Who we talked about last summer in probably a great episode, Salvage One.
That was another show that we mentioned in one of the best of shows. And you're like, what the heck is Salvage One? And I said, it's Andy Griffith basically being a space junk dealer. And you're like, that can't be real. Oh, it's absolutely real, and we covered it, as you said, about a year ago.
Now, when you mentioned this to me in 2020, I thought, no way. This could not possibly be a real show. And then I saw it was a real show, and I was like, what?
Not only is this a real show, but it would be a reunion between Andrew Griffith and Joel Higgins, who was on that show.
Oh, that is true. I didn't even realize that. But okay, Chica playing his wife, Lily, in this episode.
Playing his wife, Lily, is Eve Brent Ash from Mrs. Baker and Garfield, the movie. Not the one that's coming out, because obviously she can't because she's thoroughly dead.
Yes.
But she was one of the Covendall sisters on two episodes of Roswell and played three different roles in three different episodes of Highway to Heaven.
Oh. Yeah, that's in the Filmrise family, Highway to Heaven.
There's channels of Highway to Heaven on streaming services if you look hard enough.
Yeah, one of my favorite things is I go to the Amazon episode guide on my Fire TV and look at the Highway to Heaven channel. And I just laugh at the stills. You can just look at the still of a preview of any episode of Highway to Heaven, and he can just die laughing at whatever the still is.
It wasn't just a still of Victor French wearing his Oakland A's hat?
No. Although, let's be honest, Victor French had a sweet Oakland A's hat. We always like to mention that. That's why I always have an Oakland A's hat lying around. I always want to pay tribute to Victor French. But playing Dirty Jack Peckinpah in this episode is Bill Hart. Now, Chico, do you have any information about Bill Hart?
He was a stuntman on The Jackal, The Way of the Gun, and Escape from New York.
Ooh, that's a good list of movies right there.
And I'm going to add, since we're talking about a Western of sorts here, he was on 28 episodes of Gunsmoke and four episodes of Bonanza between 1965 and 1970. So definitely somebody who has some Western chops.
Okay, episode 6, it's a two-parter. It's part one of The Hanging of Parker Tillman. Tillman is accused of wrestling and is cleverly saved from a lynching mob by Sam. A trial is held, but Tillman's witness doesn't help his case, and he is found guilty and promptly sentenced to be hanged. Oh, no, guys. Leonard Fry's going to be hanged.
Yeah, but you know who's doing the hanging is the judge?
Oh, who's the judge?
Listen to this. Al Lewis. Grandpa Munster.
Oh, man. I hope he was wearing his cape in the judge's chamber.
I hope him and Fred Gwynn were creating some wacky concoction down in the basement. And also, we should add, he was Officer Schnauzer on Car 54, Where Are You? And actually, just yesterday, I was listening to Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, and the guest on it has since passed, but it was Charlotte Ray who played Al Lewis's wife on Car 54, Where Are You?
Girls, girls, girls!
Sadly, that was missing. I was hoping that might be there.
Oh. Well, episode 2, The Hanging of Parker Tillman. Part 2. Posing as Patch Beaudry, Sam Best enters a den of thieves to find evidence of Parker Tillman's innocence. Now, we got some names in this episode, but hold on. Playing Jeb Kincaid, and he was in part 1, Frank Morf. Do you have any information about Frank Morf?
Yes, he was in episodes of The $6 Million Man and Battlestar Galactica, but we probably know him in 11 episodes, a future entry, The Dirty Dozen, the series.
They made a series out of The Dirty
They made
Dozen?
A series out of The Dirty Dozen.
Well, that sucks, because you're obviously not going to have Jim Brown in it. Okay, but playing a character named Yancey Colleen's brother, the legendary Jonathan Banks. Wise guy, Breaking Bad, I mean, come on. Legendary name. Episode 8, The New Marshal. Tillman's candidate for Newtown Marshal, Nat Lindsay, wins the election, but he is not as suitable a choice as he seems to be. Everyone, including Tillman, are affected, and he has to be stopped.
playing that Lindsay, Mark Withers. Not a well-known name, but he has been in a few episodes. He was in 6 episodes of Dynasty as a character by the name of Ted, but he was also in episodes of Magnum P.I., Remington Steele, and Stranger Things.
And playing a character named Dave Dugan is Ted White. And I bring this up because he played Jason in Friday the 13th, Part 4, the final chapter, which the joke was on us because they made at least 6 more of them. Episode 9, Daniel's First Love. According to the Mountain Man father, his daughter is married to 10-year-old Daniel after a shotgun wedding. Sam seeks advice on the legalities.
The Mountain Man, Jimmy Jack, played by David Cannell.
I'm guessing it's Nell. He does have a connection to a person on this show. Because in 1986, he would co-star with Leonard Fry on Mr. Sunshine.
Ooh. Oh, check this out. He was also in 1 episode of the famous Teddy Z, Greg.
Oh, that's great. Episode 10, Lainey in Love. Lainey gets a date with Tom Hudson, who bids for her at the Cooper Creek Box Social. Elvira and Sam help her dress up herself and her cat for the big evening of surprises.
Playing Tom Hudson in this episode is Kevin Scannell. He did a little bit of everything in like the 80s and 90s, it appears. Too many roles to the list, but also at the same time, wasn't really on more than about 2 or 3 episodes of any given series.
I should note a co-writer of this episode, Sam Simon.
Oh!
Yeah. Well, he was in the that family there, obviously with Taxi and everything at Paramount.
He would have been a young guy at that time.
Yeah. Episode 11, The Railroad. When the railroad is planning to choose between 2 locations for their line and one of them is Copper Creek, the town needs to send someone to meet with the railroad to convince them to choose them. And the ones who are chosen are Sam and Tillman. When they get there, the railroad is looking for a respectable town, and Tillman says they are. They even have a church, which they don't. The railroad decides to pick Copper Creek. But when a representative from the railroad shows up, they need to pretend that they are a congregation. The representative tells Sam that they are not going through there and why the railroad said they chose their town.
Playing the chairman of the railroad, John Randolph. Who is just in, gosh, what wasn't he in?
Well, I should note, he was the original Frank Costanza on Seinfeld. He was the first person before they went with Jerry Stiller.
Maybe it's just me, having been here for, whatever, close to 500 episodes. When I hear a chairman of a railroad, I'm sorry, any chairman of a railroad should be played by Keenan Wynn.
Damn straight. John Randolph played Clark Griswold's dad in Christmas Vacation.
And we also have Macon McCallman returning as Mayor Fletcher and Patrick Cranshaw returning as Bob.
All right, episode 12, The New Jail. Sam accidentally shoots himself in the leg and the townspeople think it happened when he went after the Barlow gang. Despite his embarrassment, when they find out, they show confidence in him as their marshal.
We got a name in this episode playing a pregnant woman. Not even a character name. Pregnant woman. Susan Bertan from L.A. Law.
Wait, what did you just say?
Oh, no.
I really don't want to talk about it.
Not a Polanski episode.
So what did I say? I said Susan Rattan from previous installment, The Powers of Matthew Starr. Yeah, you have no clip for that show. Tough. And, oh, that's also the same Susan Rattan from 2 episodes of Buffalo Bill, former installment. Wait, you don't have a Buffalo Bill clip either? Sucks to be you. Another Carl Shub episode?
Oh, episode 13. You're not going to believe this title, guys. A man, a woman, and a hoss.
Good heavens, this is Mike Francesa's wet dream.
Sam is puzzled when Elvira leaves home after he brings home a horse for her. When she is unhappy about her lifestyle, he has to find a way for her to return home and be happy. Well, you know what? Sadly, it's not 90 years later, or else he'd inform her that Mike Francesa met Secretariat.
He actually did meet Secretariat.
That's true. Not many people know this, but Mike Francesa met Secretariat. Mike, can you believe that? Mike Francesa met Secretariat?
Part of me actually wants to say, and playing the horse in this episode was Secretariat.
That would have been a big get for 1981.
A Secretariat would have been alive, would have been probably, what, about 10 years old, 9 years old, definitely alive in 81.
Oh, they could have gotten, like, Seattle Slew. They could have gotten the firm. Yeah. Okay, well, we're done with the first half of Best of the West. We'll get to the back nine after this commercial break from 1981.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Wednesday on The Greatest American Hero, an evil game of revenge could strip Ralph of his power and the little red suit. Then, Howie and Colt go undercover to set up the biggest prison break ever.
Now you've done it.
Are you sure you know what you're doing?
No.
The Fall Guy.
Tomorrow.
Feeling 7-Up, I'm feeling 7-Up. Sharon smiles, Sharon smiles. Feeling 7-Up, 7-Up. It's a crisp, refreshing feeling.
For the third time this year,
Bosom Buddies is back
from the Battle of the Network Shuffle. Come on, everybody, shuffle. We're back right after Benson.
It's Bosom Buddies this Friday.
All right, big finish.
Ta-da! That's
ready.
Thursday the 12th, Lost and Loving Feeling, till Levitt breaks the ice and a lot more.
Put you up for a Medal of Valor.
You must be trying.
Then Dad puts the moves on Alex's girl.
She's two-timing you with your old man.
And is breaking Louie's heart on Taxi. Then on 2020, witness the genius of Ray Charles and the launching of the most awesome war machine ever known to man. Are we ensuring world peace or threatening it? Tonight, starting at 9, 8 Central and Mountain on ABC. Sunday, behind-the-scenes look at the movie that made you believe a man could fly.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
The making of Superman 1, then.
Do it!
The Klan spreads a reign of terror in a small southern town. Today's FBI. Sunday.
Back to the show. And we're back from those 1981-82 commercials. Man, Mike, I can't wait for that ABC 1982 lineup. Oh, man. There's plenty of great shows on there.
Did that include Ripley's Believe It or Not? That would have happened in 82.
Yeah, it would have been 82. It would have just premiered.
And again, if you've listened for any period of time, you know we love Ripley's Believe It or Not, specifically with Jack Palance.
Believe it or not.
Somebody's got to rerun that somewhere. Such a great show.
You know what I also love? Skin Bracer.
By Menon.
Anyhow.
Episode 14, Frog's First Gunfight. Amos Skinner comes to town to marry his unhappy girlfriend, Merle, but finds she has been flirting with Frog and wants to kill him. This leads to a confrontation in the saloon.
And we have a big name playing a role in this episode. Big not just in terms of who this person is, but big as in he was a very tall person. Playing Amos Skinner is Chuck Connors, the Rifleman. But also somebody who played both Major League Baseball and in the NBA. So he is a baseball player, a basketball player, and he's the Rifleman. Triple threat.
Not many Major League Baseball NBA combo players.
Danny Ainge.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Dave DeBuscher. There's been a few.
Yeah, but not a big club. Not like baseball and football.
Wiki says 13 people.
Oh, 13 people. So it's a baker's dozen. You know, if we can somehow get three more people to play baseball and basketball, we can have a crock block of that.
Well, while we work on that, how about you go to the next episode?
Oh, episode 15. This is something. That Calico Kid Goes to School. What? Christopher Lloyd going to school? The Calico Kid wants to marry his girlfriend, Nora, and since he needs a steady job, wants to apply for Marshall at Twin Forks. However, he needs some schooling to pass the third grade test to get the job.
Wow.
Oh, look at this image right here. Mike, do you want to describe the image I'm showing from IMDb?
Christopher Lloyd is in an old-time schoolhouse, and he looks sort of shell-shocked while it looks like three students, so I'm guessing third grade would be 8 years old, just look at him, and the teacher's there with her book, and looks like she's going to hit him over the head with a book. Christopher Lloyd had to go back to third grade.
It would be amazing. Christopher Lloyd in the third grade, you know who shows up?
Who's that?
Mr. Bogus.
Are we just pulling out all the hits from best of episodes this episode? We've talked about $1.98 Beauty Show. We talked about Mr. Bogus now. I think we're missing a tag team reference. We need to find one of those before the night's up.
Well, we used tag team last week, Robin Curtis, so.
Okay, there you go. You made up for it.
Episode 16, Tillman Held for Ransom. Tillman announces the opening of the First Bank of Copper Creek in his office. He is captured by outlaws who hold him for $10,000 ransom. However, the townspeople are reluctant to help him. Well, obviously.
They don't want to put up the money to save Leonard Fry. Oh. Playing the mayor is Macon McCallman. He was in Deliverance playing the Deputy Queen. I don't know if in the movie Deliverance I want the name Deputy Queen. That's just me. But also, he was in Fried Green Tomatoes.
Oh, that's good. Episode 17, The Cave-In. Elvira is not happy that her stepson Daniel has not yet fully accepted her as his mother. While exploring the outlaw caves out of town, an accident brings them closer together. Aww. Episode 18. Daniel fights a bully. Sam confronts the father of a boy who's bullying Daniel, and tells Big John Fletcher to make his boy stop. However, the two end up fighting in the arranged boxing match. Now, Mike, is this going to be on the 19th century equivalent of pay-per-view?
This ranks up there with some of the boxers who boxed bare-fisted. Yeah, I can see like John L. Sullivan being like the undercard. You thought you'd never get an 1880s boxing reference on this show, and bam, we hit you with one.
Okay, Mike, playing Big John Fletcher is Jack O'Halloran, who was one of the Kryptonian supervillains in the first two Christopher Reeve Superman movies. You know who he was also in, Mike?
What else is he in?
He was in the 1987 movie version of Dragnet.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. I don't think we've mentioned in this podcast that the 1987 version of Dragnet is my movie wings.
Your movie wings? I did not know that.
That's right. I own the Shout Select Blu-ray of the 1987 Dragnet.
Good. If we ever talk about the 1987 version of Dragnet again, you could say it's your movie wings. And if you remember, the first time we talked about it was in episode 468.
That's right.
So yeah, I can't wait for just the random reference to Dragnet 87. And Greg says, that's my movie Wings. We've been talking about it since episode 468.
Well, Mike, let's not forget, episode 300 was the very first time I mentioned that I loved Wings.
Everybody knows that. We've only talked about that for the last year and a half, almost 2 years.
Yeah, I never said it before episode 300. You can document it.
Absolutely not. You did not say a word about it.
Episode 19, The Pretty Prisoner. Sam apprehends a female outlaw. Sam has to bring her in for trial. Elvira is uncomfortable because she's an attractive woman. Yeah. Later, she escapes, and when Sam tells them what happened, it's hard for anyone to believe that she outwitted him, especially since she comes back and says it's because of him.
Well, if we're talking about a beautiful-looking prisoner, I don't think you can go wrong with this person. Her character name is Mae Markham, played by Dixie Carter.
Wait, the former owner of TNA Wrestling? Oh, wait.
I wasn't going to go there, but sure.
No, it's not. It's a different one.
I don't know anything about TNA Wrestling.
Good.
I mean, when I think Dixie Carter, I obviously think of designing women. And actually, thinking of Dixie Carter, she was married to Hal Holbrook.
Yes.
So yeah, big name there.
That's right. Episode 20, Elvira's Old Beau. Yeah. A man Elvira was engaged to, but because he was shot during the war, she met and married Sam instead, has come to town. He tells Sam that he wants her and intends to ask her to go with him. Sam is told by the gang not to do it, but he lets her go anyway. Tillman then tells him that he can spy on them if he wants to through the barrel of the wall. What? So wait. Tillman is telling Sam to look through with the bear on the wall so he can essentially be a cuck.
I'm sure you're looking at the same picture I am with the bear head on the wall. And if you're not, you're doing it totally wrong. But there's the bear head. Fake looking bear head, but a bear head nonetheless.
Oh my God.
Who knew there were cucks in the Old West? Well, we do have a name in this episode. Playing Jonathan St. Clair is John Calvin, and we talked about him in Tales of the Gold Monkey. He was Reverend Willie Tinboom.
Well, you know what, Mike? I have something to say. Joel Higgins and MacGruber now have something in common.
Jeez. Yeah, I'm guessing that's what Joel Higgins wants to be known for being a cuck.
Episode 21, Sam's life is threatened. Sam learns that a man he arrested escaped and is probably on his way to get him. So he and the others wonder how he will do it. And Frog points out that a woman who just came to town appears more familiar with the town for someone who just came. So Sam asks Tillman to go talk to her. But what they don't know is that she is the man in disguise.
What? Well, we got people in this episode. Playing Francis Gerard is Joel Regalbuto from Murphy Brown, but also previous entry, Ace Crawford, Private Eye.
And previous entry, Invitation to Hell. So you know what that means. We can now make him an official Hall of Fame candidate.
He's on the cusp, absolutely. And also playing Mrs. Mahoney in this episode, Susan Rattan from previous entry, The Powers of Matthew Starr. Oh, and also, it's Susan Rattan. Oh, gosh, I can't say this with a straight face. And also, Susan Rattan from previous entry, Buffalo Bill.
There's one more, though, Mike. You know what she is?
I'm not saying it because I've already done enough about that. And I want to say, not another Carl Shub episode.
Hold on a second. I'm going to cue it. Hold on.
Oh, no.
What was it, Mike? What else is Susan Rutan in?
I said The Powers of Matthew Starr.
Yeah.
And I said Buffalo Bill.
Yeah.
And that's it from what I can see.
Hey, Mike, if I wanted to go across the country to somewhere in California, what city would I go to?
San Diego's beautiful this time of year.
That's right. But besides San Diego.
San Francisco.
Besides San Francisco.
Fresno.
Besides Fresno.
Anaheim. I could do this all day. You want me to say it?
Yeah, okay. Say it.
L.A.
How has being a mom changed your perspective?
What the hell is that?
Oh, I'm sorry, I picked the wrong link.
Not a Pulaski episode.
I'm sorry, Chris Van Vliet. I accidentally picked your interview with Becky Lynch.
Wait, Chris Van Vliet, former television newscaster in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. He's got a big wrestling.
Not another Chris Van Vliet episode. Chico doesn't know what he's missing. Oh my gosh.
Oh, well, you know what? You know where that joke attempt went? Right down the elevator shaft.
I really don't want to talk about it.
Timber!
Oh! Oh my god!
Not another Chris Van Vliet episode!
Again, folks, none of this podcast is rehearsed. None of this is scripted. This is all improvised.
You can't script this stuff.
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, I do have another name, believe it or not, and it's not Susan Rutan. Playing the prisoner in this episode is Walter Robles. And the one role that caught my eye is he played Reverend Elcott in the 1954 movie Seven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Oh.
So maybe he was the reverend who married seven brides and seven brothers.
Could be. All right, Mike, we get to the final episode, appropriately titled The Funeral. In order to outwit the Dugan gang, Sam agrees to plan a transport of $20,000 contained in the coffin to Silver City. Frog hides in disguise in the coffin to enable the plan to succeed.
You're hiding money in a coffin? Okay.
Now hold on a second. If you're hiding money in a coffin, I can only imagine it would be like if it was like, I don't know, the WWE was planning like some contest where it's like, oh, there's $20,000 in the Undertaker's coffin. You have to pick a key to unlock it. And then if you pick the key and you win, you know what you get as the instant reaction. Paul Bearer going,
oh, I thought you were going to say that person's butt handed to him by the Undertaker. I would not want to meet the Undertaker in a coffin anywhere, period.
Well, The Rock learned that the hard way at WrestleMania this year.
Hey, we do have a name in this episode playing Big Mike. Oh, I didn't know I'm in this episode. No, Big Mike in this episode is an actor named Alan Autry, but he went by the name Carlos Brown in this episode. Where you might know him is he played Captain V.L. Skinner, or Bubba Skinner, on In the Heat of the Night, 146 episodes.
In the heat of the night.
That's another song that's going to go on our soundtrack. But also, we have a gentleman named Carlisle in this episode, played by Daryl Zwirling. And there is one reason and only one reason I bring him up. He was in a season 2 episode in 1987 of L.A. Law, play the clip for a third time.
I really don't want to talk about it.
Hey, Dynamoldar. Hope you had a nice trip there. Have a good fall. Oh my gosh. We're just getting desperate for the LA Law jokes now.
All right, folks. That's the show. Now, Mike, what happened with this show? This had a great cast. This had great writers. It had a great staff on this show. How did this not succeed?
I'm guessing it's because of the schedule. Well, the schedule definitely had something to do with it, I think. So what happened is Best of the West, it hopped around the schedule. It originally started on Thursday nights at 8:30. In between two very good shows, or actually three, Mork and Mindy at 8 o'clock, and then at 9, you had Bosom Buddies in the early fall, and then Barney Miller, which this would have been the last season of Barney Miller. But then for the winter, it moved to 9 p.m. on Fridays. Oddly enough, Barney Miller aired before it at 8:30. But then at 9:30, you had Making a Living. Or It's a Living, if you want to go by the syndicated name. But then it made one more move for the summer. It moved to Monday at 8 o'clock. And maybe not a bad time slot because it preceded Monday Night Baseball. But in terms of competition on the other networks, NBC was showing at 8:30 in the fall on Thursdays, Lewis and Clark, not that show. Apparently it's a sitcom that didn't last all that long with Gabe Kaplan and Geach Cook from former entry Carter Country. But I think this is going to do it on CBS. The second half hour of Magnum PI.
Well, that did it.
That'll do it. And this would have been the first season of Magnum PI or the second season? I think the second season.
Second season, because it premiered December of 80.
So that was the first punch in the gut. Then on Fridays, on NBC, it went up against McLean's Law. But again, CBS, here comes the gut punch. Up against Dallas.
No.
Yeah, that's not a good ending there. So then it moved to Monday nights. I said it was on at 8 o'clock, 8 to 8:30. On NBC, again, another show. This would have been, I think, close to the last season. I think either second to last season, maybe third to last season. First half hour of Little House on the Prairie. And then on CBS, it went up against Private Benjamin. And no, I'm not going to say anything about Eileen Brennan because you know what? She's actually halfway decent in my opinion. I can't base Eileen Brennan on my 5 and 6 year old views of her on Private Benjamin, the TV series.
Good. You've changed, Mike. I appreciate that.
That's a sign of growth.
But you know what hurt Best of the West, Mike?
Besides all the competition I mentioned?
Yes. You know who we have to blame for this failing?
Who's that?
The goddamn National Football League. Because when the pilot episode aired on the East Coast, it aired before a Thursday night game. That's right, folks. They had Thursday night games back in 1981, too. Not as often as today, but maybe one here or there. It was billed as a special Thursday night edition of Monday Night Football between the Steelers and Dolphins.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the NFL traditionally start their season on Thursday nights? Not just since they have Thursday night football nowadays, but even back then, didn't they start the NFL season on Thursday nights? And I want to say yes, because wouldn't the Steelers have been the reigning Super Bowl champions, 81?
No, that would have been the Raiders.
Well, the Steelers still would have been halfway decent. They wouldn't have won any more Super Bowl titles at that point, but They still had Terry Bradshaw, and they still had most of the pieces and parts that made him very popular in the 70s.
Okay, I looked this up on Football Reference. It was week two, this game.
Oh.
So yeah, this was a special Thursday night edition of Monday Night Football. And as I mentioned, Best of the West aired before the Thursday night game. Now, the game aired in its entirety in Pittsburgh and Miami due to the NFL's local broadcasting rules. So, while Western markets would not be affected by the broadcasting rules of the NFL, they could have cut early from this game, which was a blowout by the Miami Dolphins. Final score was 30-10. But most of the ABC affiliates on the West Coast opted to still air the game in its entirety and preempted the episode in favor of local news. So, because the pilot episode did not air on the West Coast, it caused the pilot episode's ratings to flop. And thus, the show never recovered from there.
Well, a bit of a programming mistake, if you ask me. But also, at the same time, if this show got a second season, as mentioned earlier, Mino Pelucci would have never gone on to Voyagers, and Joel Higgins would have never gone to Silver Spoons.
And most importantly, Leonard Fry would never have gone on to Mr. Smith.
Well, that's if it had a third season, so that might be a bit of a stretch.
But yep, that's the show. So what else can we say about Best of the West, Mike?
Maybe if the pilot aired on the West Coast, maybe it would have had a different fate. Again, the cast, perfectly fine. You had Leonard Fry, you had Joel Higgins, you had occasionally Christopher Lloyd. Definitely nothing wrong. And we talked about the people behind it, Ed Weinberger, who has had a very successful career. But yeah, it tends to happen if you can't get people to watch your first episode. You might have trouble getting people to watch the second episode.
So in the end, Best of the West, unfortunately, became just a thing on TV. Well, from one thing Leonard Fry was on to another. It's time for the Match Game Hollywood Squares Hour update.
It's time for this weekend Match Game Hollywood Square Hour History.
Okay, Mike, let's see what happened this week.
All right. It's now week 27. We are entering the final batch of 13 weeks of episodes. So we're past the two-thirds way mark. And this week we have McLean Stevenson. Oh, I'm sorry, I should say it was the thing on TV, Hall of Famer McLean Stevenson. And, oh, hey, we just talked about this person this episode. Richard Mall was on this week. And Nathan Cook, Martha Smith, Charles Nelson Reilly, one of our favorites, Bonnie Urseth, Larry Linville, and another one of, well, maybe not our favorites, but one of mine, Nedra Voles. See, I didn't want to lump you in there with Nedra Voles because I know how much contempt you have for her. Now that we're in the next batch of 13 weeks, they can announce we're going to have another round of the telephone match. So that's going to come up in future weeks. In terms of big wins, we had a win with John for $10,000 on Monday. John won again, $10,000 on Tuesday. Then Bonnie Urseth came through on Wednesday and Thursday with a $20,000 win on Wednesday and a $5,000 win on Thursday, but no win on Friday. So 4 out of 5, definitely not a bad week at all. Looking ahead to next week, oh, Chico's going to want to be here next week because he's probably going to talk about a certain classmate of his that he had at UNC. I think you know who I'm talking about. And if you've been listening any length of time, you know who we're talking about. He's on next week.
I haven't got a cue what it is.
I see what you did there. You'll find out next time. Greg, let's close up everything.
Well, hold on, Mike. It's not time to close it out yet because we have to do an update. It's been 2 weeks since we last did an update about him. Let's talk about Joey Gallo.
But a doo Joey Gallo. He can't hit over 200, but he can sure smack a ball over the fence. It's the Joey Gallo update.
Well, Greg, if you remember last time we talked about Joey Gallo, he had 7 total hits, 3 doubles, and 3 home runs. Not much has changed in the last 2 weeks, sadly. He has had, since the last time we did an update, he has had a total of 2 hits. He had a hit against the Dodgers on April 15th, and then he had another hit on Saturday the 20th against Houston, both of which were doubles. So right now on the year, he has 9 hits, 5 are doubles, 3 are home runs. His average is down to 122. At some point, we've got to be on like Joey Gallo watch, because I can't really see the Nationals starting him if he's going to have a batting average of 122. Yes, he's got a ton of power, but, and we mentioned this last season, he is well over a 2-to-1 at bats to strikeout ratio. So he strikes out more than one half of the time. I know I said that wrong, but you get the math. He strikes out more than twice the time. And actually, it's closer to like 4 out of every 7 at bats. Not good. How long they want to play him? Who knows? Maybe he'll have a couple more hits in the next 2 weeks and maybe bring his batting average up to 130. We'll see. Now we can start closing up the show, I think.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode. But remember, you can always go to our website over at itwasthethingontv.com, where you can listen to the 467 episodes that preceded this one. And we've got all sorts of great bonuses there, including mini-shows, live shows, instant reactions, extended versions of previous episodes, everything. And remember, we are on all social media, including Instagram, Threads, and Mastodon over at itwasthethingontv. Except for Facebook, we were at It Was a Thing on TV podcast. And remember, if you want to follow us on Mastodon, you have to search for us at It Was a Thing on TV at TVWatch.40. And remember to subscribe to our podcast wherever fine podcasts can be streamed. We are at Apple, TuneIn, iHeart, Audible, etc. And don't forget, we are on YouTube, where you can like and subscribe to our channel. And don't forget to hit that notification bell on YouTube to be informed of all future uploads on the channel, including what's coming up on the podcast next time. Well, Mike, starting next week, we're going back to 2 episodes a week because it's pilot month.
And we got some good ones lined up for you. And then after pilot month, we'll go back to 1 a week, just to give you a fair warning. But the first 2 pilots we're going to talk about, first one is based on a very popular toy from the mid to late 1980s. And this pilot, well, I think the best way to describe it is 2 words that we have on our master list of episodes, on our master schedule. The 2 words are creepy ass. So we're going to talk about a creepy ass pilot next week involving a toy from your childhood. But on top of that, we're going to talk about a game show that is a little bit confusing, but at the same time, it actually had a life overseas. Maybe overseas enjoys their overly complex game shows. Who knows? But that's going to start off pilot month. We have coming up in the month of May, 7 pilots. So we have some really good stuff coming your way, and we always try to find some really, 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 can't say good pilots. They're not so good, but we got some special ones lined up for this month for you guys. And it's going to be coming to you next week on Monday. Again, we're going to be back to Monday, Thursday for the next month or so, but that first creepy-ass pilot we're going to bring to you next Monday right here at It Was a Thing on TV. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please be kind to each other, and we will catch you for the start of 2024's Pilot Month next week.
Wow!
Thursday, Mork's homesick for Orr.
That was wildly creative, Mindy, but that hardly lightens a load.
Mork and Mindy. And Tillman's a jailbird who'll try anything to escape.
Try anything, Marshall, I wouldn't think of it.
Best of the West. Then Louis brings his business talents to Wall Street.
You need to get dirty.
It's a special one-hour taxi. Then, find out about America's fascination with chocolates. And hear the world's most famous choir on 2020.
Thursday on ABC.
Wait, Louis De Palma is going total Frank Reynolds as a businessman? That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, it does.
I just hope Louis De Palma didn't hide inside a sofa buck naked. That's one of the better episodes of It's Always Sunny.
Yeah, and also the most downright scary.
Yeah, that's the one where I sort of cover my eyes because I don't need to see a pasty 70-year-old overweight guy. Sorry.